Don't worry, I will not take the whole class to do the summary. We will only have little time so that we can see the next shloka that is there. So I'll go brief, but thought I start with shloka number 2 itself. Ahamasmi sadabhami kadachinna ahamapriyaham. So there, though we discussed it, I'll just repeat it one more time. The pratignya means the statement of the statement that needs to be proven. So there the statement is that Atma is not different from Brahman. Then the hetu, why am I saying that Atma is not different from Brahman, is because the Atma's quality is Satchidananda. So Atma is of the nature of Satchidananda. I say quality, but that is the idea, it is the nature. And the example is, Brahman is Satchidananda. So the properties of Brahman are also found in the Atma. Therefore, logically, I am Brahman. This is the idea. So Atma is Brahman. That is proven in second shloka. Then in third shloka, mayi udayati chidvyomni jagad gandharva puttanam. So there, the statement that has been proven is, Atma is the knower of all. So sarvajna and sarvakarana, and is the cause of all also. So why is the statement being made that way? And the idea is, in Atma, the world arises. I'm saying that I am the cause of all and I am the knower of all is because the world has come about in me, the self. How can I say that the world has come about in me, the self? Like the Gandharva city. The world is an illusion. And this illusion is created how the magician creates the magic. In that same way, this magician, the Atma, is creating this entire creation. Obviously, the Atma is not creating, because I'm saying that the Atma is the creator, but perceived as though. That's the power of magic. That it as though seems that the magician is doing something, but the magician is not doing anything. So that's the third shloka. Then fourth shloka is, Atma is Nitya. Nasvatah pratyabhijnanat niramshatvan nachanyatahan. Nachasti svapnashilasya. Nachashraya vinashanme vinashasya anashraya. So in shloka number 4, the pratyajna is, Atma is eternal. So Atma is eternal, nitya. And why am I making this statement? So three reasons. One is, Atma doesn't have self-destruction. Second, Atma doesn't have destruction because of contact with something else. And third, Atma is not destroyed because the cause is destroyed. And for each, there was a logic provided. That it is not self-destruction, destructible, because of pratyabhijna. There's a continuity. There's a sense of, one continuous process. So therefore, that tells me that there's no stop. Likewise, there is no parts in Atma. Because there is no part, nothing can come in contact with Atma that will destroy Atma. Because only parts can be destroyed. And third, Atma is independent. Doesn't require a cause. That which is an effect requires a cause. So Atma is not like that. Therefore, Atma is eternal. And the example given is of childhood memory, and then in adulthood of the grandparent. That is one. Then like the space doesn't have any parts, so it isn't destructible. And then the cause and effect is like the pot and clay. You can destroy the pot, but you cannot destroy the clay. Because clay is the ultimate cause, and Atma is also like the ultimate cause. So in this way, we can understand the shloka number 4. Then shloka number 5. Again, the idea is continuing. In there, na shosha plosha vikleda chedaschinnabhaso mama satyairapyanilagnyambha shastraikimutakritikai. So here, the statement is saying that Atma is not destructible by any of the elements. So this is a continuation of the idea that Atma is eternal, nitya. But it is trying to elaborate on the point of elements of the world. So Atma is, again, eternal, not destructible by any of the elements. And why is the reason? What is the reason for making the statement? Because the elements themselves cannot destroy the space. Meaning, all the other four elements, air, water, fire, earth, and even if you combine all four of them, they still cannot destroy the space. And they're all of the same reality. But Atma is totally of the different reality. So these four elements, which cannot have an impact on their element in their reality, how can it come and even touch Atma, which is of the completely different reality? So therefore, not possible. This is the logic provided. An example is still the same, like the space. So just so you are aware, we are going through the three things, which is the pratignya, hetu, and udaharana for each shloka, and at the same time we're seeing the summary. If you kind of find yourself a little lost, don't worry, just go back to those shlokas and you see it, you'll get the idea. Okay, then shloka number 6. Abharupasya vishvasya bhanam bhasam nidhirvina kadachinna vakalpeta bhachaham tena sarvagaha. So aham sarvagaha, this is the pratignya. Right? So I am all pervading. That is what the shloka is trying to prove. Then the hetu, why am I making the statement that the self is all pervasive? And the hetu is, inert things cannot shine on their own. That which is inert cannot shine on their own. An example is inert objects that are there in the room. Those inert objects cannot shine without the light. I am in the room, but if the light is not there, you all cannot see me. although you may claim to be sentient, I may even claim myself to be sentient, but you will not see my body. So that's the idea. The body is inert. And likewise, all the objects of the world are inert. Now, did the light have to travel from its source in all direction for it to pervade? Here, the concept is a little different. So therefore, example may not seem fitting. The shloka that we had and Swayam Prakashitiji explained is, there's a distant star, moon, sun, and all of those things. So is the consciousness traveling from the Atma and pervading? Is that how it is going? No. The light we are talking about is a matter. It is an inert object only. This light in this realm, in this reality, is inert. So for the example purposes, we are only trying to say that the inert objects cannot shine without the all-pervasiveness of the light. With consciousness, it is different. We are tending to think, we think that I am conscious, I am this consciousness, and from me the consciousness spreads everywhere. But it is not true like that. All of us are consciousness. And we are experiencing individuality in this body. So consciousness is the vast self, this vast everything. In it are all the cosmic things and all the cosmic beings. So therefore, we should not think that the consciousness went from me and then pervaded the universe, and therefore I'm now able to see the universe. That's not true. That is only a limited understanding because we associate ourselves with the body mind. So this proves that Atma is all pervasive because inert cannot shine on its own. In order for inert to shine, sentiency is required. So proximity with the sentience, closeness with the sentience, and therefore everything that shines in the world somehow or the other proves that it is enveloped with consciousness. It is spread around with consciousness, in and through. Then number 7. Nahi bhanadrite sattvam narte bhanam chitochitah chitsambhedopi nadhyasa rite tenaham advayam. So aham advayam. So pratignya, my statement that needs to be proven is, I am non-dual. Why do I say I am non-dual? Is because adhyasadrite, without superimposition, chitsambhedha pina, there is no association with consciousness other than because of superimposition. So why I say I am non-dual is because everything in this creation is a superimposition on me. So you see how the word non-duality and the word all-pervasiveness are kind of pointing the same thing, but from a different perspective. When I talk about myself, I say I am non-dual. There is nothing like me. So then what happens to the creation? The creation is a superimposition on me. When I talk about the creation itself, then I say, I am the one that is all pervasive. I am the one that is through, in and through all the creation. So it's the same thing, but from a different perspective that we have to look at. So why do I say I am non-dual? The reason for me to make the statement that I am non-dual is because the world is a superimposition. And by superimposition means that it is not independent. That is the idea. It requires something else for it to become independent or to be seen independent. But it is dependent. So what does it require? So that is also mentioned, that nahi bhanadrite sattam. It requires existence in order for itself to be present. So the world cannot present itself without the existence. And narte bhanam chitochita. And achitaha, that which is inert, cannot be known, cognized without consciousness. So existence, consciousness is the thing on which the whole creation is superimposed. Okay. Oh, and what is the example? Well, there is no example given, because how do you give an example of non-duality? So Swayam Prakashiti ji, in this one, he didn't give any example. But you can say, you know, self-experience is an example of non-duality. So that is one. Or you can say, you know, horns of a rabbit. Horns of a rabbit, you don't see. So that which is not seen, that which is not known, you don't speak about its existence. You don't speak about its awareness also. But that which is there, that which is present, its awareness and knowledge is. Okay, then number 8. Na deho nendriyam chaham, na prano na mano na dhihi, mamata parirabdhatva, akridatva idam dhiya. This one is very simple. Here the pratignya is, na aham dehaha indriyam pranaha manaha dhihi. So basically saying that atma is not BMI. But that is not up. And what is the reason for me to make the statement? Two things. Mamata parirabdhatva and akridatva. Idam dhiya. So because of idam and mamata. Idam, thisness. And mama, mindness. With the body, with the mind, with the intellect, we always associate it with my body. And in this way, we associate with so many things and we transact in this way. But we never feel that I am that. For transaction purpose, I may say, I am, you know, full. I am hungry, I am starving. Whatever that. But so the idea is BMI always has mindness. And that which is mine is not me. Very clear. Mine cannot be me, because if mine means me, then why say it is mine? Why not say it as I? And anytime you say it is mine, mine separates from me and it becomes this. You can put it aside and then you can observe it. You can say this. So these are the two reasons. And the example we just talked about. I am fat, I am skinny, I am... So these are examples that say, I am not BMI. is the fact that I say I'm fat, I'm referring to the body. The fact that I say I am dull, referring to the mind. Okay. Then shloka number 9, Sakshi Sarvanvita Prayan, Aham Naham Kadachana, Parinama Paricheda, Paritapai Upaplavat. So here, the statement is saying, Atma is not ego also. And the nature of Atma is Sakshi. So two statements made, I am not ego and I am Sakshi. And for both, the reason for making this statement is, ego is found with parinama, modifications, paricheda, limitations, and paritapa, afflictions, upaplavat, connected with. So in ego, we find these. In Sakshi, we don't find these. Therefore, I am Sakshi, I'm not ego. And here, it is a self-experience. The example is, I am the one experiencing this. How can the witness have an example? So in this way, there was no example spoken in the shloka. And I think we saw 10 also, yes. Today we have to see 11. Yeah, we have to start with 11. So 10 also we saw, and in shloka number 10, Supte hamina drishyante dukkha dosha pravrittayah atastasyeva samsarah name samsartu sakshinah. Now, in this statement, in the shloka, what is trying to be proven is Atma or Sakshi is separate from ego. In the previous shloka number 9, what was proven is that I am not ego, but I am Sakshi. And here, two are separate. The two should not be confused as one. Why? So the reason being is that wherever ego goes, there is dukkha dosha pravritti. Wherever ego goes, there is sorrow. Wherever ego goes, there is dosha, which is raga, dvesha, kama, krodha. These are all the doshas. And wherever ego goes, there is pravritti, action. It forces us to do something. This is what the nature of ego is. So, this is not seen in deep sleep. So, supte na drishyante. In deep sleep, these are not seen. Therefore, it means that Sakshi is there. I am there. I know I am there. But when, although I am there, I don't experience dukkha dosha pravritti. Therefore, it must mean that ego and Sakshi are two different things. And the whole samsara belongs to ego. Samsara doesn't belong to Sakshi. So the statement proven is samsara belongs to ego, not to Sakshi. So I must make the correction when I said what is the pratignya vakya. The pratignya is the samsara belongs to ego. And by that, what is trying to be proven is ego and Sakshi are separate. Okay? So the pratignya vakya is samsara belongs to ego. Why? Because when ego is there, we find dukkha dosha pravritti. And the example is, iron and heat. Taptaya, pinda. So when you have the combination of iron and heat, you see in their combination, the properties are carried over to others. So it is trying to show that wherever one is, there is another. And another example that was also taken was flower and crystal. Raktima, that is the flowers in red flower, and spatika. These are the two examples taken. So till this are the pratijna, hetu, and udhara. Okay. Now we go to the next shloka. We kind of talked about the connection last week, but I'll mention the connection one more time. So the connection here is that an objection is raised by Swayam Prakashitiji saying that, okay, if you say that samsara belongs to ego, then tell me one thing. You said in deep sleep, ego is not there. So then how can you say deep sleep belongs to ego? That which is not there, how can you say the state belongs to that? It is not there. The house belongs to this owner, but the owner doesn't stay there. How can you say it belongs to that person? So like that, if in deep sleep, ego is not there, how can you say? And the other point is, you only said Sakshi is there. So therefore, deep sleep state should belong to Sakshi. The Sakshi is present, so it should belong to Sakshi. You say that there are two entities, ego and Sakshi, which are two separate. Why do you put everything on ego? Why don't you put it on Sakshi? So you should put the deep sleep state on Sakshi. And now if you say that deep sleep state belongs to Sakshi, then you also have to agree that waking and dream state also belongs to Sakshi. Because you cannot have one state belong to one and the other state belong to other. They all three go with one entity. They cannot go to somebody else. This is the counter argument Swayam Prakashitiji raises. To give us the connection to the next shloka, where it is going to be proven that in deep sleep, ego is not there. That doesn't mean that the owner of the deep sleep is Sakshi. The very fact that the ego has gone to deep sleep shows that the owner of the deep sleep state is the ego. That very fact should prove that the owner is ego. And therefore, the other two states also belongs to ego only. This is what it is going to prove next. Shloka number 11, we'll chant first. Supta suptim na janati. Na supta. ते स्वप्न जागरौ जाग्रत स्वप्न सुषुप्तीनां साक्षतोऽहमतद्दशः सुप्तः सुप्तिं न जानाति नासुप्ते स्वप्न जागरौ जाग्रत स्वप्न सुषुप्तीनां साक्षतोऽहमतद्दशः सुप्तः सुप्तः द वन हू हैज गॉन टू स्लीप द स्लीपर डीप स्लीपर हू इज दिस डीप स्लीपर द ईगो सो ईगो व्हेन इट गोज इनटू डीप स्लीप सुप्तिम न जानाति डजंट नो द स्टेट ऑफ डीप स्लीप डजंट नो द वेरी फैक्ट दैट डीप स्लीप हैपेंड So that is the idea of deep sleep, where one who doesn't know the state. However, how did you come to know that there is a deep sleep? If ego had gone to deep sleep, how did you come to know that there was a deep sleep? That must mean that there is something other than ego also present during deep sleep state that when we wake up, we are able to recollect that ego had gone to deep sleep. So this knowledge is the awareness, the illumination of deep sleep by the Sakshi. And what happened to ego during this deep sleep state? So during deep sleep state, the ego went into its seedal form. Seedal form? Causal form. So in its causal form, ego cannot transact. Ego cannot do anything. So therefore, this kind of gives us the idea that one who is sleeping is the one who does not know the deep sleep state. Yet the fact that I know deep sleep state tells me that I am the one who illumined the deep sleep state. The difference is very, very slight. My knowledge, see right now wherever you are sitting, you are knowing through your eyes whatever object you are looking at. The computer screen or the camera or whatever you're looking at. This is the knowledge you are having with your mind, with your ego. And the ego is saying, I am seeing through the mind, through the senses, this object. Okay. Is this the same way that in deep sleep, the ego reveals for us that I am having deep sleep? No. In the deep sleep state, ego is silent. There is no awareness, there is no voice, there is nothing. So this fact that there is nothing tells me that ego has gone to that causal state. But upon waking up, I am able to tell that I was present. How can I tell I was present when I had no awareness, when I had no knowledge? So therefore, this has to give us the hint that there is some other entity other than ego, which is always there. Whether ego is present, whether ego is not present, it is there. And that it is there is this Atma, is this Sakshi. So Sakshi illumines the deep sleep state. Then the next line, na supte, sorry, na asupte. Asupte, suptaha, gone to sleep, ego. Asuptaha, one who is awake. Who is the one who is awake? Sakshi. Who is the Sakshi? Atma. So, in Atma, asupte, in, meaning is where the place of action, where the action is taking place. So in Atma, there is no Swapna and Jagrau. So the other two state also cannot be spoken of for the Sakshi. Why can't you say that? Same logic. The logic doesn't change. If you say that each, the waking, dream, and deep sleep state all have to belong to one entity, by proving that deep sleep belongs to ego, the waking and dream also has to belong to ego only. It cannot belong to somebody other than ego. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti Nam of the three states, so waking, dream, and deep sleep state, Sakshi Ataha. Therefore, Ataha, therefore, I am the one who is illumining all the three states. Aham Ataddasha. Taddasha means the state. So, waking, dream, and deep sleep state. Or the one who says that I am of these three states is called Taddashaha. So, Taddashaha, these states belong to me. And when I say I am Ataddashaha, I'm saying that none of the three states belong to me. So, Aham Ataddashaha is saying that waking, dream, and deep sleep state do not belong to me, because in deep sleep state, I am awake, but I merely illumine the deep sleep state. Likewise, in waking and dream state also, I illumine the ego's activity. But because I illumine the ego's activity, and the ego is so close to Sakshi that if we confuse ourselves to be ego and we say, I did the activity, instead of saying, I merely illumined all the activity. So confusion has arose in our perception. And that confusion is leading us to believe, I am this ego and this anger. This is very natural. It's very sahaj. And this can only be broken by practice. This you cannot break by neglecting it, waiting to see that over a period of time, will it change or not? Because this erroneous thinking is so subtle that unless you catch the subtle thought, you will never be able to destroy the thought. So that is the idea. The point is, when you witness something, you cannot be the owner of that state. Very simple thought. There was nothing complicated in this. Shall I continue forward? Shloka number 17 is continuation of this idea only, of the three states.
Some basic question, Dhirenji. So we are saying Atma or Sakshi is not, has no kartritva, right? So how does the knowledge that I was in deep sleep get transferred to the ego? Because ego was in causal state, it doesn't know what happened. But then when I wake up, ego knows that I was sleeping. So how did that, you know, that whole knowledge get transferred then? But Sakshi is not doing that, right? Sakshi is just a witness.
Yes. So Sakshi is a karta, as you said. In explaining, I was present, there was no karta bhava. What was the karta bhava explained there? Just the fact that I was present. There is no arrogance on me. Arrogance was taken by the ego that wakes up and says, I was present. Sakshi is also illumining this idea of the ego upon waking up. So Sakshi is also doing the same job when we wake up of illumining. Sakshi says to the waker, the ego, that you are the one who was asleep. And here is the other idea. We have to agree that there has to be a continuity from waking to dream to deep sleep state. The continuity cannot be broken, because if you break the continuity, then the one who wakes up next time, you cannot say that that waker is the same one. And all the experiences of the previous waker, the previous ego, will be not present with the new ego. But we do not find that. That is where that pratyabhigna also comes. So when the waker goes to deep sleep state, the waker was aware of the previous state, and therefore waker knows that it has gone into deep sleep. And likewise, when the waker wakes up from the deep sleep, that continuity has been maintained. So because the continuity maintained, the waker knows that I had gone to deep sleep. Well, the ego knows, not the waker. The ego knows on the waking that I had gone to deep sleep. Sakshi, all it did was illumine the state when the waker went from waking to dream, dream to deep sleep, and from deep sleep back to waking. So Sakshi illumined all three. Sakshi did not say, I was present. The one when you wake up and says, I was present, I experienced good sleep, I knew nothing, that is ego only. That is not the Sakshi saying. Sakshi is illumining the ego's sayings. So you are correct. Sakshi stays akarta only. But if we say that, you know, what you are saying, that the ego had gone into deep sleep, that how did ego know that it had gone into deep sleep? It is merely the change that the ego recognizes, because it is traveling on the substratum of continuity. You can say that there's a tape playing, okay? There's a tape playing, and on the tape, you hit that how to get you the idea, but there's a button you play, the wheel continues, the cycling continues, but it doesn't present for you any sound or any. So like that, you press the button of snooze or of pause, so the reel continues because the ribbon, that, you know, thread or whatever that is, that will continue to spin. So on that continuity, you experience the pause. So therefore, you recognize that you had gone to. I don't know if I did a good job in explaining. So how is it the ego knows if the ego was in the causal state? Well, in the causal state, just because you have gone to causal state doesn't mean that there is no knowledge there. There's a knowledge of continuity. So from causal state, when you come back to your avatara, you know.
I was, maybe I misunderstood. I thought the ego understands only the vritti. Like ego is basically mind, right? It has aham vritti and then idam vritti. So it understands only vritti. But what you're explaining now is, even when there is no vritti, ego has that continuous experience. But then...
Ego did not experience the abhava vritti.
Okay.
What ego experienced was, when the ego wakes up, it experienced that there was a lapse, there was a time gone. And when it experienced that time gone, that's all it says. So it doesn't experience the abhava vritti, that I was not present. All it experiences is that I was there.
Is that the ignorance? You know, sometimes they say that the causal state is ignorance.
The causal state is the ignorance. So in deep sleep, the ego is in that causal state. So that is the state of ignorance. So when the ego wakes up, the vritti that it experiences is not of what it did in deep sleep. Because ego didn't do anything in deep sleep.
Okay.
Let me rephrase the idea again. From the vritti that you are saying, right? Aham vritti and idam vritti. If we take the idea from aham vritti and idam vritti, when the ego wakes up, the abhava experienced by the ego, that is the idam vritti. That abhava is the idam vritti, and I was there is the Amrit. I was there in the causal state, that is Amrit. And Abhava is the Inamrit. I don't know if that helps.
I mean, it takes time to understand this.
Mandukya Upanishad expands this a little bit further. So it explains very well this portion. That's what I want to say. As I have gone through that, I can get that point easily.
Okay. Okay, Gopal Krishnanji, next time you bring that point. The point to keep in mind is the one who has gone into deep sleep, that ego doesn't know what is happening. So, ego is in the state of ignorance. But the abhava of the ignorance is illumined by the Sakshi. And that is vocalized. So upon waking up, I was present, I enjoyed the sleep, I experienced nothing.
I think the seventh verse of Mandukya Upanishad elaborates this more, that it denies all the three states and leaves to Turiya state only. So I think seventh verse is the one which explains a little bit more on this one, I think.
You can think of it this way. Another example that came to mind. Our house. When the light is there in the house, you are able to see the walls, the pictures, the curtains and everything in the house, correct? So you being present in the house, you are the perception, you are the light. You are the ego and the light is the sakshi. When everything goes dark at night, you experience nothing. Okay? So because you experience nothing, your state of experience during night is, I don't know anything. So you are staying in that state. The ego is staying in that state of I know nothing. And the sakshi is merely illumining that I know nothing during the deep sleep state. So then when you wake up, there's that continuity happening. Obviously, there were some faults in that example, but again, I'm trying my best to give some ideas. All right. So the continuity of this shloka is there in the next one, where is trying to still point this idea that the three states, the waking, the dream, and deep sleep state, do not belong to Sakshi. And there's a slight point in there that Swayam Prakash Atiji brings out that we need to see. The slight point is, when ego goes to sleep, who is giving rise to consciousness? Is the consciousness, if you say the consciousness was born, when ego goes to deep sleep, that's when the consciousness is born. If you say like that, who gave rise to that consciousness? And if I pose a question like that, we cannot say that the mind gave rise to the consciousness. Because mind just went to sleep. The ego went to sleep. How can the ego that went to sleep give rise to consciousness? You also cannot say that it was born from nothing. How can nothing be give rise to something? Doesn't make sense. So the only logical idea that comes about is the Sakshi had to be present even before. But the voice of Sakshi was silenced, was overshadowed by other voices. And in deep sleep state, that voice becomes very clear. It's like this. Another example that comes to mind. If you go, you know, parent teachers meeting or some of these events where you go and a child is doing a performance and everybody is clapping. In everybody's clap, do you hear your clap? Hardly. When do we actually hear our clap? When we continue to clap even after the event is over, or we bring our clap a little closer to ourselves. So in this way, during the waking and dream state, the activity of the ego is so much that the voice of Sakshi gets overshadowed by the sound created by the waking and dream. In deep sleep state, because the ego is not doing anything, the illumination becomes so clear of the Sakshi. And that is my nature. That is what is true. So next week, we'll continue with the next one. Let's do the prayer and end. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Thank you, Dhirinji.
Thank you, Dhirinji.
Thank you, Dhirinji.
Thank you. See you next week.
Gopal Krishnanji, next week you bring that point.
Okay. I will. See you next week.
Okay. Adios.